Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week, and thank you for enjoying that extended theme song introduction. I'm Jack Peterson. Chris Bessler out today. Will Love also unable to join us this morning, unfortunately. A dentist appointment, so I'll be your solo host this morning on North Idaho News of the Week. And right now, I'm alone in the studio without a guest. Nobody to talk to about the news of the week. But I do have the news as written in our local periodicals, and so I will be going through it now, as well as what's going on at the state level and what's available to us from other sources. And who knows? It's possible that somebody will, some kind reporter will walk through the door at any moment, and we'll be able to talk to him. But right now, it's just me. So this could be a short show with nobody to jump into conversation with. Still, I have your headlines, and here they are. At the state level, actually, we start at the national level, where Idaho U.S. Representative Russ Fulcher is seeking input on federal land management in a survey. Fulcher's office on Tuesday released an online survey regarding recreational activities, maintenance, wildlife, roads, permitting, and other topics related to federal public lands in Idaho. Feedback from this survey is intended to ensure Idahoans have a voice and seat at the table as policy in Washington, D.C. on federal lands is evaluated, Fulcher said in a press release. Nearly two-thirds of Idaho's land is federal public land, and Fulcher has previously supported selling or transferring large swaths of federal land to local control. This survey is available online with a link through Fulcher's website. In other state news, Idaho health officials on Tuesday reported the first local case of a parasitic intestinal infection that is spreading across the United States. Cyclospora, that is Cyclospora is the name of the virus that is it a virus? Actually, I'm not sure, but it's a cyclospora infection. And it was in an Idahoan who did travel out of state before falling ill, so not necessarily locally sourced. That's according to Department of Health and Welfare spokesperson A.J. McWhorter. More cases could come. Wash your lettuce and your berries, which is right now the source, as far as we know, of that the main source of that disease, which has documented, I think, 1,600 cases nationwide in 34 states, and now including Idaho. Going down more state news, Idaho's Secretary of State confirmed that the Reproductive Freedom and Privacy Act officially qualified for the November ballot after Idahoans United for Women and Families submitted more than 110,000 signatures in early July. This confirmation came out just on Monday, and it has been granted a spot on the ballot as Proposition 1. This is the largest signature tally ever gathered for a qualified initiative in state history. The certification caps a 10-month grassroots effort that reached deep into every corner of the state, setting up a November vote on restoring the reproductive rights Idahoans held for nearly 50 years before the state's abortion trigger ban became law 4 years ago. Melanie Falwell, lead organizer of Idahoans United, said in a press release, "Never underestimate what a dedicated army of mothers, fathers, grandparents, doctors, nurses, friends, and neighbors can accomplish. Thousands of Idahoans stepped up because they believe freedom, privacy, and the right to make personal medical decisions belong to families, not politicians." End quote. To qualify, Idaho law requires valid signatures from 6% of all registered voters statewide, along with 6% of registered voters at least 18 of Idaho's 35 legislative districts. All signatures were verified by county clerks before certification by the Secretary of State. And Idahoans United for Women and Families exceeded both thresholds. Let's see. Hold on. Let's see. Medical marijuana, on the other hand, failed to qualify for the ballot in November. There were, at one point, there were actually two medical marijuana initiatives simultaneously being being supported, and the medical marijuana in neither case did it meet the threshold required to be on the ballot. So that will not be appearing. There will be that one significant proposition will be the one. In more local news, let's talk about the air quality. You may have woken up this morning and found a bit of smoke in your eyes once again. Current local air quality is... hold on. Pardon me while I find my sources here. The current air quality here in Sandpoint is poor. We can certainly say that. I think it's currently rated here. We are. It's currently rated as unhealthy. By AccuWeather, it's measured by a number of different measures, and it comes back as fine particulate matter, which is those inhalable pollutant particles with a diameter less than 2.5 micrometers that can enter the lungs and result in serious health issues. There we go. As far as that's the parts are the 2.5 micrometers. Yes, micrometers. The 10 micrometers is currently rated as 57. Let's see. And that forecast, we are forecast to maintain this kind of unhealthy rating today and tomorrow, and slight improvements in the air quality Sunday and Monday. This is all hoping, I suppose, that there's been no new fire outbreaks following last night's electrical storm, which very well could have happened, and I don't think any of us would be terribly surprised. It was quite a storm last night here in the studio. I came into some clear indications that we had had a power surge, power outage, and needed to reboot a few things. Let's see. That I should also mention that this unhealthy rating means that health effects can be immediately felt by sensitive groups, and healthy individuals may experience difficulty breathing and throat irritation with prolonged exposure. You are advised to limit outdoor activity. Most of the smoke, as far as we know right now, comes from two fires in Boundary County. There's the Turner and the Upper Smith fire. Crews are on site in both locations. But as I said, more could develop following last night's lightning storms, which were a little bit closer to our point of signal origination. Well, here's a little positive news. The pedestrian long bridge has reopened. So the long bridge is back open again to non-motorized traffic less than a month and a half after the Idaho Transportation Department closed the span due to deterioration of the support infrastructure below the bridge deck that posed a threat to public safety. The reopening took place July 14th. Came after an intensive effort by engineers, bridge inspectors, maintenance crews, and a local contractor to design, fabricate, and install custom steel support brackets beneath the bridge at its most critical locations. Crews installed the brackets referred to as saddles under the bridge deck to shore up some of the girders where the most severe damage was observed by inspectors. Officials stated that the brackets are intended to balance the weight of the structure, which allows pedestrians, cyclists, and other users to traverse the span, which was built in 1956, converted to non-vehicle use when the current motorized long bridge entered service in 1981. Okay, let's move on to what are really our two top stories here, and I will be brief, but it looks like we may actually have a reporter coming in to join us before our time runs out here on the North Idaho News of the Week. And we'll leave it there for now. But hopefully we will have a guest here in just a few minutes to talk about this. I would say the top story in local news concerns the Lake Pendere School District and Lake Pendere High School, which is the alternative school at the alternative school on currently located on Boyer Street, and which is proposed to whose students are proposed to move to the portable what are called the portables, the movable trailers behind Sand Point Middle School, and that move would take place not this coming school year, but in the 27-28 school year. For those of you who have been following the story all along, I will just say that the latest update is that the school board did hold a vote as scheduled on July 14th. Following this, the grievance filed by the Concerned Citizens for LPOHS Coalition, that vote to move to relocate the alternative high school was confirmed, and it was unanimous. So the board, all five members of the school, Lake Pendere School District Board, voted to relocate the alternative high school from its Boyer campus and to the portables behind Sand Point Middle School beginning in the 2027-2028 school year. The meeting was packed. There were more than 80 community members, teachers, parents, former students of Lake Pendere High School gathered at the July 14th meeting that was this past Tuesday night. That is, and hopefully we'll be talking more about that in just a few minutes with one of the reporters who covered that story. And I'll move on to the other story that is of particular local interest to so many individuals in this listening area. The Sand Point City Council voted on Wednesday to limit paid parking to Sand Point City Beach and city lots, while parking kiosks in two-hour zones remain disabled until a revised motion can be presented at their next meeting. Councilors said they hope the decision will provide an opportunity to educate the community about the parking program and build trust within the community for the next couple of weeks. That's reading from the piece in the Daily Bee that appeared just this morning. Recap of the meeting we'll have in just a few minutes. So I'll go over that then, but just so you know, what they have, if you have been downtown, you've noticed that the, parking kiosks, all the parking kiosks that were installed, have been covered in black plastic bags. And so, no one is now to use those kiosks, at least for, the next meeting is in 3 weeks, not two, and I can't remember why there is that delay, or the meeting in question will be in 3 weeks, or 3 weeks from Wednesday. I'll get the exact date of that next meeting for you in just a moment, but there was a proposal that was tabled until that next meeting to remove the parking kiosks that are located downtown. And then there was further discussion of the cash payment system as well, which it doesn't exist. They're hoping to establish a way that that people can pay for their parking in cash for those who need to pay for parking. Let's see here. Another little news brief. The Panhandle Bike Ranch has halted all activities following an injunction issued by the First Judicial District Court in the nonprofit's ongoing land use dispute with Bonner County. The two entities met in court on June 30th and July 8th following the county's issuance of a cease and desist letter, with which Panhandle Bike Ranch did not comply. Jennifer Kalbach, the co-founder of the bike ranch, announced the ranch's closure in a July 8th email to subscribers. And she wrote, quote, "Until we get more clarity relative to the scope of such injunction, and perhaps thereafter as well, the bike ranch is temporarily closed and all scheduled riding events and programs are canceled during this time." The Panhandle Bike Ranch, which occupies 170 acres in Sagal, which is zoned rural 10, that meaning property owners must obtain a conditional use permit before engaging in any commercial activity, as it is a residential zoning category. There was a conditional use permit received in 2024, but the court later vacated it in 2025, finding that the Bonner County Board of Commissioners failed to list facts supporting its decision to approve the development. The Kalbach's transitioned PBR then into a 501c3 nonprofit, believing that the ranch could operate without a CUP. Panhandle Bike Ranch then requested the county change the organization's land use designation from recreational facility to a park, which does not require a conditional use permit. The county, which denied the request, advised the Panhandle Bike Ranch to reapply, and instead PBR filed a petition for legal review in January 26, which remains unresolved. The park opened to riders on May 22nd, and the county filed its cease and desist letter on May 27th. Nevertheless, Panhandle Bike Ranch continued to host riders until the July 8th ruling. Let's see, another zoning news within the county. There was a, I believe it was in yesterday's paper, and allow me to pull that up. There was a an announcement of a change, or a motion has been filed to change some zoning in Hope. There is a the county commission, a zoning change that would reclassify 15.6 acres on the Hope Peninsula on Lake Ponderay as a recreation area rather than being zoned as rural 5, meaning a change to a recreation area rather than being a residential and agricultural use. It will be for recreation. Jeremy Grimm, the mayor of Sandpoint, is also the owner of Whiskey Rock Planning and Consulting. And on behalf of Stonehenge Partners LLC, the Whiskey Rock Planning and Consulting submitted an application to the Bonner County Zoning Commission. The request is not a developer-driven deviation, Grimm wrote. Rather, it is a necessary proactive step to legally harmonize the property zoning map with the county's own adopted long-term vision, he said, citing the Bonner County Comprehensive Plan. Several residents have raised concerns about the zone change on social media. there's been concerns about developing the land, which does sit on wetlands and is used as an active nesting ground for wildlife. It also sits close to Sam Owen Park. Under the proposed zone, this change would mean that the land could be able to be used to provide housing or as a commercial or private resort, as long as it provided a range of recreational activities or as a conservation development. Currently, there's no publicly announced development plan for the site. You can find a map on, well, on the county's website. Also, the Daily Bee online has an article with a map indicating exactly where the parcel is, but it is after turning off of Highway 200 onto that Sam Owen Road. It is on the in between. It is almost immediately there after exiting Highway 200 and heading down the Hope Peninsula, right at the end of Ellisport Bay. We're gonna play just a little bit of music, and hopefully in just a second we can continue our exciting conversation. I'm going to say we're going to hopefully talk a little bit about parking, because that is on everybody's mind right now. Thanks for listening to me host this program all by myself, and we will have, hopefully we can get a little bit more engaging in conversation with when we add a second voice to these airwaves in just a moment, unless there's a, a problem. We'll find out. Let's play a little song by The Weather Station from 2021. This one's called Parking Lot, and we'll be back in just a moment after this, hopefully with a guest, and hopefully continuing our discussion about what transpired on Wednesday night. So thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week. Stick with us here on 88.5 KRFY. All right. Good morning. Welcome back to North Idaho News of the Week, where we are joined now for the first time on these airwaves by Michaela Law. Michaela, you are a reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee.
Yes.
Okay. And in your capacity as a reporter, you cover the city beat and you cover education, and that's where everything's happening right now, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a little bit in light of the music that I just played. Let's talk a little bit about what everybody can't stop talking about, the parking. The parking situation in Sandpoint and what transpired at that city council meeting on Wednesday, which went quite late.
Yes, it did. I actually left around 10, but the meeting went on for longer, and their city council meetings start at 5:30. So it was quite the meeting. Yes.
I ran into, one of the city council members later who said he didn't get home until I think closer. By the time he finally got home, it was 11:30 or closer to midnight. It was one of the longer meetings. And I guess just I think we know that the result of it. I mentioned this just earlier in the show when I was reading the headlines, that the result of this meeting is that downtown parking rollout that started in July. Right now, if you go downtown, all the parking kiosks are covered with black plastic bags.
Yes.
And people are just instructed not to use them, and it's as if they weren't there at all. You're still allowed to come down and park for 2 hours, and it seems like, I guess I'm not sure, and I'm not sure that anybody, that this was made clear in the meeting, whether there's any enforcement whatsoever going on with downtown parking right now.
I to my understanding, it sounds like Councilman, what is his name?
Schreiber.
Mm-hmm. He was kind of the one who orchestrated the motion to you know, limit parking mm-hmm. to City Beach and the city lots. He wanted to immediately disable the city or the kiosks in the 2-hour parking downtown core. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think everything right now is kind of tentative, and mm-hmm. it, you know, the 2 weeks leading up to the next city council meeting will give the community and the council a good buffer a grace period for them to kind of, you know, think things through. And, you know, I heard some of the council members saying that they hope to educate people more mm-hmm. about the parking plan and, you know, clarify things that have not been clarified initially with the rollout, as well as establish trust, or I guess bring back the erosion of trust that has been lost within the community.
Yeah. The city council holds meetings on the first and third Wednesday of each month. Mm-hmm. And that means that there won't be a meeting on the 29th, because that will be the fifth Wednesday. Mm-hmm. When some months there is not, there's a fifth Wednesday, and that they do not hold a meeting then. So the next meeting at which this matter is going to be addressed again is not until August. Yeah. Yeah, 3 weeks from last Wednesday. And did if I read correctly, Schreiber was trying to, he made a motion basically to just disable everything mm-hmm. downtown, and he was trying to make that motion then on Wednesday, mm-hmm. just to be done with the kiosks downtown and just have paid parking at City Beach and the city lot. Mm-hmm. But he was advised, I think, by City Attorney Fonda Jovic
yep.
that he couldn't do that at that meeting, and he would have to, yeah, that would have to be made, put on the agenda. That would have to be agendized
exactly.
and come up on
exactly.
the next meeting.
Okay. Yeah, so those are all new things that I'm learning, yeah. too. I was like, oh, wow, they're quite strict with the way that, you know, things go about in this meeting. And if it's not on the agenda, they need to make sure that they take the steps necessary in order for them to change what they need to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to make a significant change like that, it has to be on the public agenda so that the
right.
Yeah, interested
and
people
can
comment.
And there were quite a few things that he was suggesting and proposed. Mm-hmm. And so, right. I mean, that step is necessary.
Yeah.
So.
Were there a lot of people at this meeting?
There were. There yeah. was a pretty good turnout. I've only been to 3 city council meetings this mm-hmm. far.
Well, you've only been here for what?
I've only been here for a
month and a half.
This is my fifth week or okay. fourth
yeah.
week. The
okay.
end of my fourth or fifth week. So I am, you know, this is foreign to me as well. And mm-hmm. I'm doing the best that I can to just learn on the job.
But you are... But the, what was I going to say?
Yes,
oh,
there were a lot of people
there. Yeah.
Yes, and, mm-hmm. and a lot of people were very vulnerable. I mean, we had people, mm-hmm. you know, we had business owners. There were some young people who, you know, went up and shared their thoughts and even made suggestions. So it was really cool to see, you know, the society come together, mm-hmm. a very diverse society, right,
yeah.
come together and, you know, share their concerns. I think that's one thing I love about journalism is you get to see people advocate for what they want, and you get to amplify, you know, especially in local journalism, their concerns, so that people know what's going on in the community and they can stay informed.
Jesse Johnston, owner of 2 downtown businesses, mm-hmm. this statistic was kind of eye-popping to me. Mm-hmm. She said that compared to last year, her sales are down 64% for
yes.
the same period.
Yeah.
So yeah, that I think that was there. That was a main concern from local businesses
yes.
is that people are not local residents are not coming downtown.
Yeah, and that's mm-hmm. been a reiterated concern among, like you were saying, many mm-hmm. many local business owners is the need for locals to continue to come downtown, because since the implementation of this program, what was reiterated at the city council meeting was that you know, we can see that they're, the loss is coming from, or the lack of income is coming from locals not showing up. I mean, the tourists are important, but, you know, the locals are just as important.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also a shared concern among many business owners. Yes.
Yeah. The proposal from Schreiber, and it was seconded, I believe, by Joel Spiro,
mm-hmm.
who was on the opposite mm-hmm. side of Schreiber initially. So his flipping on this is what has kind of made the difference mm-hmm. to go from one to the other, or from on the kiosk issue anyway to for the kiosk to against. The motion, if it does go through at the next meeting in 3 weeks or two weeks and 5 days, it would mean that they would just, as you understand it right now, they would go around, completely remove all those kiosks that they just purchased, like just take them out of the ground, or would it be something else?
I don't think that's going to be what they do. I mean, they have, 2.5-3 weeks to think about it.
But
it sounds like some of the council members, Councilwoman Deb Rule was expressing, you know, mm-hmm. the need to be judicious, right? Because they just spent a significant amount of money on these kiosks. And so I think she's like, before we make any rash decisions, let's go ahead and, you know, we'll reconvene. We'll have some time to think about this. But before we... I think mm-hmm. I put it in my article there, you know, before we, you know, dig anything up and out of the ground, let's think about what we really want and what would be the next steps before we go ahead and remove those kiosks. Because, it was a significant amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they are shiny and new. And I guess you'd think, it'd be a shame to see them in the wastebasket. Or in the, you know, in the county dump, it would also be, I mean, you'd think that they must have some programming features that allow them to change and address some of these, the main concerns
right.
that people have.
And mm-hmm. Jason Welker, mm-hmm. you know, he was very transparent with the community, very honest and mm-hmm. took responsibility for a lot of the mishaps, mm-hmm. That took place at the beginning of the rollout. You know, there are some technical issues, communication issues. And mm-hmm. so he owned up to that as well as many of the council members. You know, I think everyone was on board that it was affecting them as much as it has been affecting the rest of the community. And so a lot of them took responsibility for, you know, where things kind of fell short.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. How did that vote come down, or was there a vote taken to, was it the vote, I guess, was to table the discussion mm-hmm. and that probably mm-hmm. passed.
It passed. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think, Councilwoman Deb Rule was the only one who, did not vote in favor of that.
Yeah. So that'll come up again in 3 weeks. And right now it looks like that vote will be, 5-1 perhaps,
mm-hmm.
or it, as it mm-hmm. currently mm-hmm. stands, but there's 3 weeks to find out. I mean,
there's three weeks to find out.
Yeah. Okay. Goodness, Michaela, anything else you want to say about local parking? You're new in town. Are you surprised at how Sandpoint has taken the issue of paid parking has just taken this whole town by storm?
Yeah, I mean, I mm-hmm. I definitely came at a turbulent time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fresh out of college, and this is my mm-hmm. first kind of real work experience out of college. And I would say that I'm really getting the experience now.
Yeah.
I'm in the thick of some pretty hefty, hot topics.
Yeah, it's been an exciting. Period to be in town and covering city issues, I would
yes,
think.
Yes,
yeah. Relative to some other times mm-hmm. that you might have arrived, yeah.
I will say, being in a small community, a small town, it's very evident that people care about each other. It seems to me that it's not a very transient town. There's not a lot of change that happens super often. And so when change does take place, you know, people are not afraid to vocalize their concerns and their opinions. And that's been really cool to see. People advocating for what they want. One thing that I thought was interesting in the council meeting was Councillor Pam Duquette was saying, you know, for a community that emphasizes, belonging and supporting one another, planning to boycott local businesses is not reflective of, you know, those core values of the community.
Yeah.
And, you know, we heard some asides, people saying, well, then take away the parking, but I thought, you know, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Anything else, I guess, from that meeting? Any other comments? I'm sure there was no official tally taken, but was it mostly city residents there, mostly mm-hmm. county residents? Who was at?
I'd say a good mix of both.
Yeah.
Sandpoint City residents and Bonner County residents.
Okay. Real quick, let's talk about the Lake Pend'Oreille High School vote, which was unanimous. I think I mentioned most of the updates, but the background is just that there's a grievance filed on June 30th against Lake Pend'Oreille Lake Pend'Oreille School District by the Concerned Citizens for LPOHS Coalition. So just on Tuesday, as you wrote, the school board met and discussed the issue as they had been originally asked to do, as was one of the conditions of that grievance. They voted unanimously to relocate the alternative high school, which is, of course, exactly what the grievance is opposing and what that group is opposing.
Yep.
I think I kind of gave this summary already, but I guess my question is, what comes next? Do you know? I don't know. I don't think the saga of Lake Pend'Oreille High School is over.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah. Do you know what, what next steps are for either the school board or for the group opposed to the move, the Concerned Citizens for LPOHS Coalition?
Yes. I think the coalition is not done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think a lot of them knew that the school board was going to vote in favor of the relocation.
Yeah.
They came to advocate. Right. And so I think a lot of them knew, but it was very emotional for a lot of these community members who have a connection to the school. And, you know, a lot of them who spoke during public comment pleaded with the school board to not relocate the school for many different reasons, kind of refuting the argument that it would be the best thing to do for these students.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think things are over. Whether it's like taking legal action or continuing their public outcry, I think they're going to continue this.
Yeah, they haven't at this point. They haven't filed like a lawsuit exactly, but they did this grievance that they filed was filed with the the Idaho Department of Education, and they asked the Department of Education is currently conducting an additional audit of the district's PowerSchool student information system metadata. There was a suggestion, to put it mildly, in the grievance that that the school district had been inaccurate with their record keeping, and as of now, the coalition has not initiated a voter recall campaign, But they did. That was one thing that they kind of threatened to do in their settlement letter on July 6th. Mm. Was that if the board went through with this, there would be a recall campaign, and it could be that the school board would be facing some members of the school board could be facing recall, if not all of them. That's a possibility, but they haven't initiated that yet. There's also, yeah, and then I guess there would be a legal challenge through the courts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Michaela, tell us briefly, where are you from? let's meet our reporter. Meet Michaela Law. You wrote, as all reporters do, I think, in the Daily Bee. I remember Jack Freeman wrote one of these, sort of an introductory piece. Mm-hmm. Hello. yes, Daily Bee welcomes City Education Reporter by Michaela Law. So where are you from before you got to Sandpoint?
Yes, well, I graduated from Brigham Young University in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up, I was born and raised in Hawaii. Me and my family, we moved to Utah when I was 12. Mm-hmm. So I spent the latter half of my childhood in Utah. I finished middle school, high school, and I went to college in Utah. Upon graduation, I really wanted to start my journalism career, and I wanted a career in journalism. I wanted to continue to cultivate the skills that I had been growing for 4 years, and I was ready to continue to learn more. Outside of the university setting, my first experience with reporting was religious reporting, which is pretty niche, and I learned a lot. I'm super glad that was my first experience outside of university setting. I did that for my internship to graduate, and I learned so much. And so when I began applying to different job positions, I was initially, you know, thinking about staying in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
It's closer to my family if I had landed a job in Utah. But yeah, I was like, I might be more likely to land something sooner if I cast a wide net and I apply to entry-level positions across the country. And so that's what I did. I applied to different entry-level positions across the country. I ended up getting an email back from Carolyn, the hiring manager and the editor of the Daily Bee. And I thought the interview, everything that she told me in the interview sounded like something that I would be interested in doing. And, I took the position, but I was really excited when I found out that I was going to be reporting on education and the city. It was something new for me, something new to learn. And, there's something about local journalism that is so special. I always say it fills the gaps that national journalism can't, you know.
Yeah.
We're not going to see the New York Times reporting on the relocation of Lake Pondere High School. And so it really does give local communities an opportunity to connect. I would say it's the heartbeat of a lot of local communities.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful to be here.
So when you go home, you go back to Utah, to Hawaii?
Yes, I go back to Utah.
Okay. Well, that'll be nice. Yeah, Sandpoint's a little bit of both, isn't it? It's a little bit of Utah and a little bit of Hawaii.
Yeah, we've got our city beach.
There's the beach. Mm-hmm. I think there's a Hawaiian restaurant on the bridge now.
Really?
You've been there?
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, check it out. I can't remember what it's called, but yeah, there you go.
Hawaii will
see how
be
it
home.
Stands up. Yeah.
I love Hawaii, and I love my culture. I'm very rooted in my culture, and I take pride in being Hawaiian and being from Hawaii. So, it's kind of cool being able to call both Utah and Hawaii my home and now Sandpoint.
So. Hey, cool. Well, welcome to town. We'll look forward to hearing from you again here on these airwaves. Thanks, listeners, for joining us for North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. And now it's time for Bird Note, and Nauta's Eclectic Mix all day long. Yes, this is 88.5 KRFY Pondere. Michaela Law, a reporter for the Bonner County Daily Beat, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, Jack.